today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Mike, I've decided to quit my job to pursue music stardom.
Oh, really? Can you sing like Paul McCartney?
No.
Okay, then. Can you get funky like Etta James?
Not really.
Well, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to give up your dreams of stardom. The only thing you're really qualified to do is record a podcast episode about early Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, well.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Wagner and
Vasanth Ramamurthy.
And Jim and Patrick are away today, and Vasanth and I are going to sit in, and we are going to talk about the early days of Fleetwood Mac, sort of pre-Stevie and Lindsey. And before we get started talking on that, Vasanth, this is your first time actually hosting an episode. You've called in before, have you not?
That's right. Yep.
But this is the first time you've hosted an episode. So tell us a little bit about yourself and where you live. And
sure. Yeah, I've been a listener for a while with the old podcast, even. And yeah,
I love the euphemism, the old podcast.
Supposedly, we're not supposed to say the name, right?
So I guess it's top secret. Don't anybody look it up.
But yeah, I live in the Chicago suburbs. I am a father of two girls, and just a big music fan. It's great to be able to host this episode with you, Mike, a veteran of this show.
That's a kind way of putting it. Well, I was honored when you reached out to me, because obviously I'm a Fleetwood Mac fan. So you were the one who actually picked the episode. So why don't you tell us a little bit about why you picked this particular topic and your interest in this area.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, your Tusk episode, which was actually episode 972, if people want to go back and listen, was sort of top of mind for me. That was a great episode you did with the interview with the guys who worked on that album. And so that kind of got me thinking. You know, I've been a fan of Fleetwood Mac for at least 20 years or so, but pretty much for most of that time, it was the classic Buckingham Nicks era, and I really only got into the albums before that, really within the last 3-4 years, I would say. And it just got me thinking how most of the stuff you read about or hear about is that era, because obviously that was when they were massive. But like, you know, for all those years I sort of ignored all the stuff that came before that. And when I finally ended up hearing it, it was like, wow, like, this is all the stuff I missed out on. So that's why I kind of want to do this episode. There may be other people out there who are in the same way, you know, only familiar with the Buckingham Nicks era and are kind of maybe missing out on the stuff before that. So we thought we'd give a little overview of that and help people out.
Excellent, excellent. Obviously, everybody knows about Stevie and Lindsey from the band. And they probably heard the other names, but you want to give a little bit of the background on how the band got started and where they were formed and the original members and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So they started around 1967. The original members were Peter Green, Jeremy Spencer, and the namesake members, Mick Fleetwood, the drummer, and John McVie, the bassist. And they kind of knew each other from playing in John Mayall's Blues Breakers, a pretty famous British blues band. I think Eric Clapton was in there too, and a bunch of other people have passed through that. So that's kind of how they got started playing together. And then a couple other members, Danny Kirwan, joined in 1968. And we'll talk more about Christine McVie, but she didn't actually join until 1970. So really, Peter Green is the main, I guess, focal point of this early era, being the main songwriter, one of the main songwriters and the lead guitarist.
Peter Green's Les Paul is kind of a famous Les Paul. It was, he gave it to, or sold it for a cheap price to Gary Moore, but there's something about that Les Paul that causes it to be a very special Les Paul, something with the phasing. I think it's got a flux capacitor. I don't know. And anyway, so it has escalated in price over the years, and the current owner of the guitar is Kirk Hammett of Metallica. And if you read online, it says he bought it for $2 million.
Wow.
And I was like, I thought it sold for like a couple $100,000, which is crazy enough. But I was like, $2 million kind of, wow.
Thank God. Right. I don't have a guitar purchasing habit.
I do. And I will not have that guitar, just so you know. So anyway, so we wanted to highlight a few songs from that era. And the first song we wanted to talk about was Black Magic Woman, which most people, I'm sure, have heard the fantastic Santana version of the song, but it is actually a Peter Green song. And anything you want to say about that one before we have a listen to it?
Yeah, I mean, speaking for myself, I only heard the Santana one for a long time. And but yeah, the green one, you know, the original is pretty great too. And I think Santana did a good job kind of putting a Latin jazz kind of spin on it.
Fantastic version. It's, as always mentioned, is one of the great cover versions, but the original also has a charm as well.
Yep. I got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make a devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, 'cause you might just break up my magic spell.
The next song we wanted to discuss was a song called Albatross, and this was a little bit of a hit for them, I guess, back in the day, and a little bit of a more famous song for them. Any comments on this one?
Right, yeah. So actually, if you listen to this one and then listen to the Beatles' Sun King on the Abbey Road medley, you may hear kind of a similarity with the cymbal washes, kind of meant to sound like the ocean. So the Beatles were familiar with the song Albatross, and they kind of wanted to get a similar vibe. So it's also interesting because it's an instrumental song, but just kind of a different vibe from blues rock, which they were doing generally, and just kind of a different side of the band, and a different side of Peter Green's songwriting. And also he had some help with Danny Kirwan, who also wrote on the song, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
The last song we're going to talk about from the Peter Green era is a song called Green Manalishi. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's how I would say it, with a two-prong crown. That's right.
Yeah, and it's really sort of the high water mark of Peter Green's guitar playing of this period, I think, and really is a really quite intense song. And I know it's a favorite of yours, Vasant.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually the first time I heard this was, I think probably the most famous cover version, which is by Judas Priest on their Hellbent for Leather album. I heard that first and I was like, man, this song really rocks. And then like, I was kind of surprised that, you know, figure out later that, you know, this is originally a Peter Green Fleetwood Mac song. So, yeah, it's really, this is a big influence on hard rock, heavy metal. You know, obviously Judas Priest covered it. Other bands like the Melvins have covered it. And it's kind of a dark, lyrically song, you know, talking about devil horned things and all that, you know. Green was actually doing a lot of acid around this time, and he started having these drug induced dreams, and this is kind of the point where he started having a mental breakdown, and he actually left the band right after this. Mm-hmm. So it's kind mm-hmm. of the peak, but also the fall of Peter Green, who sadly passed away last year during the lockdown period. He kind of kept a low profile for most of his career and life after Fleetwood Mac, but remained a big influence on everybody. And actually Mick Fleetwood organized a tribute concert to him sometime in the past year. So one thing I would recommend is actually if you go on YouTube, you can check out a cool video clip from that concert where the aforementioned Kirk Hammett is playing the song and Billy Gibbons is singing. So to a couple of, you know, huge hard rock figures there covering up this song. So that's definitely worth checking out.
Now when the day goes to sleep and the full moon looks, and the night is so black that the darkness cooks, and you come creeping around, making me do things I don't wanna do. Can't believe that you need my love so bad.
Come sneaking around. As Besson said, the Peter Green era ended. There was a short period between the Peter Green era and what people normally call the Bob Welch era. It's one of those things when you go to Wikipedia and you look at all the people who are in Fleetwood Mac, it's kind of mind-numbing. It's like I can't remember who was in right. there and when. It's like, but basically it was Jeremy Spencer and Danny Kirwan kind of leading the charge at this during the, was it Killin' House album, right?
Killin' House, 1970. Yeah, so it's, like you said, it's a transitional album. They deserve credit, though, for sort of keeping the band together, because I think I read the band very well could have broken up after right. Peter Green left. So credit to them for keep it going. It's a pretty decent album. They're both pretty good songwriters as well. But they need a new guitarist, and they are recommended a guy named Bob Welch, who went to high school with a friend of the band. And so that's how Welch comes to join the band.
And as most people probably know, this is kind of where they move more towards, for lack of a better term, a California sound as opposed to a blues-based sound. But the first album was an album called Future Games, and the title track from that album is not exactly a California sounding song. I think it's one of your favorites from this era, is it not?
Yeah, because it's so different. It's 8 minutes long, which is, I think, probably, you know, one of the longest, if not the longest, Fleetwood Mac song. It's just kind of moody, psychedelic, and it's pretty different from anything they'd record before or after. And like you mentioned, so it's the first album, the same album, Future Games, from the title track. It's the first album with Christine McVie as a full-time member and Bob Welch. It's really one of the stronger ones of this era.
Thank you. song that was a hit actually for Bob Welch as a solo artist originated on this on the next album, which is called Bear Trees, and the song is called Sentimental Lady. And most listeners have probably heard the Bob Welch single version because it was a sort of a big hit. It's slightly different in that it doesn't have that polish. Lindsey Buckingham actually worked on the I think three of the members worked on the
right.
on the
Lindsey,
single,
right? Mick and Christine, yes.
The single has the polish, and this one is a good sounding song, but we'll give you a sample of that, but you can tell that it's a little bit different. Any thoughts on this one from
yeah, you know, I actually, the first time I heard this, like you said, was the Bob Welch version. And the funny story about where I heard it was, I worked at like my college bookstore back in college, and they would play over the speakers, just like your most basic, bland sort of yacht rock adult contempo station. And Sentimental Lady was one of the songs that would come on there, and I remember just hating it, thinking it was total garbage. But I think now...
Have you changed your opinion?
I do like the Fleetwood Mac. I haven't listened to the Bob Welch version in a long time, but I do like the Fleetwood Mac version. It's proto-yacht rock, I like to call it, you know, before Christopher Cross and other stuff like that. But somehow right. It works. It's still a good song, I think. And I think a big part of it is Christine McVie's background vocals on the yeah. chorus are pretty key to it, to making yes. it good.
Yeah, she sings background on the single, as we were discussing, but it's far more prominent on this version.
You are here.
At this point, I'd like to talk a little bit about Christine McVie. She became a much bigger contributor during the Buckingham Nicks era, actually. Her songs were bigger hits during that era. But she did have several really, really good songs during the Bob Welch era. And one is a nice song on the album called Heroes Are Hard to Find. And it's called Come a Little Bit Closer. It's a classic Christine McVie song. Any thoughts on this one, Faisal?
Yeah, so Christine was actually, she was a member of this British band called Chicken Shack, who was sort of in the blues circuit, and they played gigs and kind of crossed paths with Fleetwood Mac, and that's how she met John McVie and married him, actually. So she was known to the band. She kind of helped out on the earlier albums and doing like art design background vocals, but she released a solo album called Christine Perfect. That's her maiden name in 1970, mm-hmm. and she joined the band, like we said, on Future Games in the same year, 1970. So I agree with your assessment. I think her songs, she definitely became a stronger songwriter, I would say, after Buckingham Nicks joined, and probably you can attribute some of it to sort of playing off of Lindsey Buckingham and, you know, his production skills and all that. But this is a good example of an early kind of classic of hers. It sort of has that majestic Phil Spector-ish production on it, and it has some nice slide guitar playing from Sneaky Pete Kleino, who was in the Flying Burrito Brothers. So you know, reminds me sort of stuff from George Harrison's All Things Must Pass with the slide guitar and the production and stuff on there.
The next song we're going to talk about, going back to the Bare Trees album, we're going to talk a little about Danny Kirwan here, is one of my favorite songs of the early Fleetwood Mac era, and it's a song called Dust. I don't really have any, you know, background on the song. I think it was taken from some poem. I don't know for sure. I just love the song. I've always loved this song from the first time I heard it. Danny Kirwan made several contributions to the band, from the Peter Green to the Bob Welch era, and this is by far and away my favorite of his contributions. And he didn't last after this album. Was this was his last one, wasn't it?
Right, Bare Trees was his last album. Yeah. So his first major work with Fleetwood Mac was, like we mentioned, was kind of helping out in Albatross, and Peter Green gave him a lot of credit for helping him to finish the song and make it a hit for them. So overall, he's a pretty solid songwriter and guitar player, and again, deserves credit for kind of keeping the band going, keeping them afloat after Peter Green left. But he was fired after the Bare Trees album, because he himself was exhausted and just fighting with Mel Welch and other people in the band, so they had to let him go after that.
The next song we're going to talk about is another Bob Welch song, and this is great song. If there's one song that I think could have been a hit that should have been a hit or could have been, it's probably this one. It's a song called Silver Hills off of the Heroes Are Hard to Find album. One thing I wanted to talk about is the production on all these albums is really unique, and I always enjoy the sound of all these early albums. They're quite different from the Buckingham Nicks era. I mean, but these are like sort of a much sparser and more natural sounding production on a lot of these songs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they always sound really good, I always think. And this one in particular always sounds really great.
It's very just sort of 70s American radio kind of feel to it for me. And the chorus is completely memorable, where he says, if I could sing like Paul McCartney, get funky like Etta James, that, you know, just sticks in your head. So yeah, definitely a great song.
She came in like a hurricane, wearing boots and diamond rings. with a fox fur on her shoulder, she set me wondering. And I could tell she was feeling abandoned, because she flashed a couple looks my way. She said, hi for eyes, you never ask me, but I'll tell you anyway. She took me out on the Blackboard Jungle, put me straight in her.
Before we go, just want to remind everybody that if you want to contact Jim and Patrick, you can do that through Facebook, Instagram, the Twitters, Open Up the Window in Yale, and you can call the Echo Party Jimmy Party Line, 612-440-1984. Apparently, you can call that and call back and call back and call back. So this has been great. Any final thoughts on the Fleetwood Mac era, pre-Stevie and Lindsey?
I guess all I would say is don't be like me and take 20 years to check out this stuff after hearing the Buckingham Nicks stuff. That's what I would say.
And there's also a Buckingham Nicks album that was recorded pre-Buckingham Nicks
also
era.
Worth checking out. Check out the Christine McVie Perfect album. That's a good one too.
Yep. Lots of good stuff. One thought I had is that the band is actually kind of not really a band, but more of a traveling drama show. You know,
it's amazing. I can't think of any other example where the rhythm section has, you know, is the namesake of the band, has lasted so long without even being contributing songwriters. That's just amazing.
It's really amazing, and they're still together, so
yep, long may they run.
Anyway, this has been absolutely a thrill. Really enjoyed it, Vasant, and hopefully we can do this again real soon.
Yep, thank you, Mike.
We will talk to you guys later.
It's the same kind of story that seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide, at least half of a playing field. Because there's no explaining what your imagination can make you see and feel. Your body wants nothing. You know you're hypnotized. Now it's not a meaningless question. Ask if they've been and gone.
Do you want to do the intro now?